Did you know you can save up to 70% on the best brands just by shopping at FromRebel.com? We're talking about strollers, car seats, high chairs, espresso machines, cookware, everything you need for way less. Here's how it works. Every single day, Rebel drops thousands of new products on the site for up to 70% off. It is a constant stream of endless deals from top brands like Abba Baby, Nuna, Baby Bjorn, Breville, Nespresso, KitchenAid, Le Creuset, and more. But you have to act fast because every deal is one of a kind. So if you see something you love, make sure you add to cart fast. So stop paying full price when you don't have to. Whether it's baby gear, kitchen upgrades, or a treasure for your home you didn't know you needed, Rebel has it for way less, up to 70% less. Shop from Rebel.com and save big.
With the state of today's economy, it is more important than ever to invest in products that last for years to come. As the seasons shift and get cooler, make sure your closet is stocked with durable layers that stand the test of time from American Giant. American Giant's clothes work harder and are wearable season after season. Their greatest hoodie ever made is made of the highest quality materials that are cut and sewn right here in the United States. So you're investing right back into your local community. Choosing American Giant means taking a stand for American manufacturing and hardworking Americans, something other mega corporations don't care about. From fleece to knit, all in a range of colors for versatile daily wear, American Giant delivers everyday pieces designed for everyday life. Feel the difference of quality made-to-last clothes from American Giant. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
Hello, Star Wars fans. We're back again, 2 weeks in a row, with a Starlight podcast. Once again, Lord Dagovir has become part of the permanent crew. He's part of the Starlight podcast crew now. So we welcome you back again. And we've also got Daddy Sheev, John Bates, as we all know. And yeah, I'm Jedi Connor. I'm super excited. We got another 3-episode Andor drop, this past week, and I'm super excited to just kind of get into it. How are we feeling about everything right now?
For our audio listeners, the giant smile on my face, but the show just makes me so happy. really excited for the last 3 episodes. Went in, you know, with all the anticipation, and they definitely came through. They were really good.
Yeah, man, I still have some nitpicks, you know, that I have for myself, but man, dude, I really don't know how much better you can do with the dialogue and the monologues and the production. Like, it's just like, it's all there. And if you have enough patience, you can understand and see the full vision. But man, I'm sad we're only getting 2 more weeks of this, 3 more weeks of this. So that's, yeah. Man, I just want more.
Yeah. The show is definitely not for people with TikTok brain. So, like, if you have a short attention span, like, I've noticed with this show, it's, like you said, Lord Dagovir, like, there's a lot of detail and a lot of, you know, time into it. And it's been so good so far.
Yeah. Oh, we'll definitely have to touch up on that, like, later, because I got some things to say, you know?
Okay. But, all right.
Yeah, but yeah, I definitely agree with you to a certain extent, for sure. Absolutely.
Gotcha. Yeah.
I'm excited about this. These episodes were super exciting, super tense, honestly, is the feeling that comes to mind. A lot of tension that goes on. So let's kind of just get right into it. Same format as last week. We'll kind of go through different arcs, kind of pop over different spots, but we'll look to kind of stay on track, but you know how we get. So let's start with the with episode 4 of the first episode of this arc. Basically, we wake up with Bix, and she is having one of these nightmares that she keeps having and keeps referencing with Cassian. Basically, Dr. Gorst, who has tortured her in the past, is she keeps seeing different versions of him and kind of just nightmare scenario. And we see like another soldier there, and he is basically teasing her about it and things like that. So how are we feeling about Bix's situation right now. The whole beginning of that arc is basically them going to the store, kind of just doing normal things, but they are all, both her and Cassian are struggling in different ways.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of just showed like kind of like the paranoia and like overprotectiveness too from Andor, kind of, you know, as we saw in the last three episodes and then even in season one, like when he wasn't there, what happened to Bix? So you kind of got a look into like why he's being a little overprotective of her. And we even learned like that's why he killed that, you know, Imperial trooper, because he saw Bix's face. And you can even see from Bix's perspective, you know, she's still traumatized by that whole experience and still seeing it every night. And yeah, I thought that was a really interesting way to kind of show how the characters are still, you know, coming over their past drama, and how even a year later, how it's still impacting them. What did you guys think?
The craziest thing is when we start off this show, Bix is the one doing everything. Like, she's the one telling Andor, like, hey, you got to meet this guy. It's like she's Luthen's, like, place, that spot over that middleman, you know? And I think what's interesting as well, too, is this whole Dr. Gorse slimy. Damn, bro, I'm not trying to, but Jesus, man.
No, fuck
this
Dr. guy.
Gorse. Yeah, bro, this slimy motherfucker, bro. Oh, my God. Man, no, yeah, man. So the crazy thing is, though, is about this guy is – I like how the story kind of tells you Bix is so obsessed about this moment because, you know, this is trauma. This is abuse. This is interrogated by one of the most disgusting things that we've ever seen in Star Wars with the dying alien sounds for infinite time that she has this. It's like really crazy. So it scarred her forever. But then when you see where this all goes, Dr. Gorse doesn't even know who she really is. Like he faintly remembers her. And I think that says a lot about how you affect people in life and how that one interaction between you and this other person is like something that they can never get over. So people with anxiety or depression or whatever it is, maybe abuse victims, whatever it is, you know, like Bix is going off every single day to the point that she has to take drugs to forget this stuff just to sleep at night. And then she's the one that needs to be coddled, that needs to be pulled along. You know, when Cassian is like kind of like not necessarily babysitting her, but, you know, doing all this stuff that he's doing and then also having to make sure that she's okay, which is like, bro, your guys are in the middle of a war. It's not the greatest time to be having like a crisis mentally like that. So, yeah, that was a lot to take in those three episodes.
Yeah. And one of the things I want to mention is you mentioned like Bix having to be babysat. The opposite is almost true when we go outside of the house. Cassian is with Bix in the supermarket, and you see he's on edge, and Bix is more normal and more comfortable. Where the shopkeeper is like, "Hey, like, what do you want?" Blah blah blah, and then like I forget exactly what happens, and Cassian like hears something. He's like, "We don't need that. Like, we don't need to do it." Like, he's like on edge, and he can't function in society outside of that little pod, whereas he's better functioning inside of that safe house and inside this war. It's kind of an inverse where she almost has to babysit him. She's like, "I'm so sorry about him. Like, let's talk and let's be normal here." So it's
such good chemistry. And they complement each other in that way too, because like, bro, Cassian reminds me so much of like me, if like I can't order pizza over the phone because my anxiety sometimes, you know, and this guy is like one of the most coldest, hardest killers in all of Star Wars. And the dude literally can't go to Costco because he's too afraid of people. He thinks everyone's out to get him. So I just thought that was so funny to see. But Bix was like in her element, and I feel like it was even helping her mentally too. So yeah, very interesting. I love that dynamic. That was sick.
Yeah, exactly. And then we get to the point in their arc where Cassian is asked to go to Gorman. And Luthen tells him like, it has to be alone. You like can't take Bix with you. We need her strong, but she's not there yet to the fact. And Cassian accepts this job. And then one of the things that I really enjoyed was him going to some part, like some person who's in the rebellion that deals with like transportation. And they had this little conversation that's obviously code for something. And then they give Cassian like who he's going to be, his secret identity. And it's just in his little ear pods. He's like, you are Varian Sky.
Yeah. The designer.
Yeah. The designer. Yeah. So that little moment was really cool to see. But I think it's super interesting how Luthen just sends Cassian on his own. And they kind of talk about the fact that like, it's harder to do stuff, with a partner or someone that you care about, basically. Mm-hmm. What did you guys think of Cassian being asked to go to Gorman and kind of that sequence when he gets there?
I'm losing my train of thought here, but I'll just say that, I mean, I thought that whole dynamic, you know, like you kind of noted between Luthen and Andor was interesting. And then even when Andor leaves and then he goes and confronts Bix, you know, and like goes and checks on her, I thought was interesting as well. What did you guys think of that, of him kind of like going behind Andor's back? Because you kind of saw too, you know, when he got back, how like angry Andor was about that whole thing.
Yeah, I think it's helping us all see that, which I thought Rogue One did a very good job when it first came out, is the first scene that we have with Cassian is him shooting the informant, who wasn't a bad guy. You know, he was a good guy. That was not something that happens in live action Star Wars. So you have that neutral gray area where it's just like, oh my God, we just saw a good guy do something terrible. What the hell? He murdered this dude. And now you see Luthen, who is practically in charge of all this, you know, and now you see him getting a little bit closer to the Saul Guerrero side, the radical side, or I'm just going to use every single piece around me. I don't care if he's sleeping with Bix or not, bro. This is my board, you know? And I was just like, damn, bro. And then Cassian also doing his stuff too. And he's going to Gorman. And then he's like, you know, you guys don't know what you're doing here. You know, like, oh my God, like, bro, yeah, like these guys over here on Gorman. Yeah. They're and he tells it straight out to Luthen too. He's like, yo, these guys are trash. They just started. They got money and everything, but they have no idea what they're doing. And I was just like, wow, dude, Cassian went from I'm finding my sister to, yo, bro, I run this and y'all ain't ready and good enough to be on my team yet. So yeah, man, I just have so much more respect for Cassian in the series. So when I go back and watch Rogue One, I was like, okay, he's not a nobody anymore. Damn, I feel like they should have made the show before Rogue One. Like, yeah. God, you know?
It kind of sucks. We kind of know, like, you know, the ending per se, because it would have been cool to, like, to have that unknown. But it is kind of cool now to see, like, you know, how Andor got to where he was in Rogue One.
Yeah.
Yeah, yes. I agree. I think Cassian is just becoming – Cassian and Luthen have been, like, shooting up my character ranks. Like, those two are my favorite because I love gray characters. I love people that are on the good side but don't do, like, the best things. Like, you need someone like
– Like Saul.
Someone like Luthen, and honestly, Saul. Yeah, Saul's a little bit more of, like, a
– He's a little more –
He's more of, like, a cult leader. As opposed to like this like mastermind with like all of this stuff. But I think the rebellion needs someone like them to do the dirty work. It can't all be sunshine and rainbows and hey, we're doing this for good. Like you need to make sacrifices, which is what the whole entire show is about.
Yes. The reality of the situation. Imagine, I swear to God, imagine if we had a Jedi like that in the prequel era. Oh my God, Anakin. No, yeah. Well, that's another day. For another topic.
I totally agree. So I guess we'll hit on a little bit of what Mon Mothma is doing. Mon Mothma has been like politicking around. She's been asking for help. She's campaigning hard for Gorman. Like she's pushing for votes and she's getting none of it. And this is something that I like the politics of it. I can see how some people could kind of fall off with the like her talking to different senators and her going to parties and things like that and kind of everything's in code. But what did you guys think of Mon Mothma in this like the beginning of this arc trying to campaign hard and honestly getting absolutely nowhere?
I think it kind of just shows the grip the Empire's starting to have on everybody, you know, when she's still trying to advocate for Gorman and even the own senator is like, I can't do anything, like you know, like you don't want to go against Palpatine. Like you can really see the fear And the Empire really feels like this, like, overarching, like, evil. So I thought that was really interesting to see just in this first episode with Mon Mothma, like, going around talking to all the senators and nobody really wanting to, you know, help her. They kind of, the elites kind of in the show are kind of just content with just how everything is, and nobody's kind of willing to oppose the Empire per se. So I thought that was interesting. What did you think, Daggavir?
Yeah, I think that's why this show needs to be sat through and endured, even if you don't appreciate the dialogue, because the show is very dialogue heavy, but that's the point. It's helping you understand the level and the gravitude of, like, what is actually happening to these people that were separatists or republics, whatever they are now. It's not them. It's just the Empire. And if you read the Reign of Empire book, Reign of Empire, Mask of Fear, that's what it is. If you read that book, you understand, like, you know, Mothma's hustling. Like, she's just hustling. She's trying to get all these ex-separatists, all these ex-people that she used to hate and go to war against, and now she's trying to ally with them, and how hard it is for her to get signatures for everything that's going on. I think it's the Declaration of 2000. I can't remember exactly whatever she was trying to do, but it's just everyone trying to stop the Empire being what it is and pretending like it's the Republic. You know, we all know where this is going. You know, the Imperial Senate is going to be dissolved in a couple of years. And you can already see people starting to bend the knee. They've been bending the knee. They're terrified of this. They don't want to have any part of it. It's just stay indoors. Don't say anything. And maybe we won't die. And I think that's the best part about this show, that it's showing you how terrifying the Empire is when it's not even at war with its own people. So it's so good, man. It's just, you don't see that in the movies, you know?
Yeah. Something that stood out from her in this episode, in the beginning of this arc, is, well, not specifically her, but there's this scene where there is, like, there's someone in the middle basically leading the Pledge of Allegiance to the Empire.
Yeah.
And you can see how uncomfortable and, like, furious Mon Mothma is during that. And that's when she storms out and starts, she just has had enough of the Empire, and just the fact that they are doing the, like, Pledge of Allegiance, it's something that, like, really stuck out to me. It's like, hey, I used to do that in school, the Pledge of Allegiance to the United States of America. when you're pledging your allegiance to the Empire as well, it's like, hey, like, what's going
on? You see Palpatine?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, that pledge kind of just shows how trying to just take away the individualism of every planet. Is kind of like, oh, you know, you have all these other, you know, plants and stuff. No, there's only the Empire. And you kind of, that's the main thing, like, I got from that scene, is, like, just how, like, I don't know what the term is.
It's basically like instead of a bunch of individuals making up a whole, it's just, like,
just the Empire.
It's just the Empire. There's nothing. Yeah. It's that's all you
no
see.
No individualism. That's the word I was looking for. Yeah.
And then, let's talk about now. So let's talk about Dedra Miro and Cyril Karn.
I want to talk about that. The secret agent.
Last week we had a little bit of fun with those two. Say, like, they just make me laugh. I can't stop watching them. Like, the way that they interact is hilarious, and it's, like, so interesting. It's a weird relationship that they've got going on, but I think it's basically what happens here. Cyril is being tapped. he's being wiretapped. They're always listening to all of his conversations with his mother. And he wants the Gorman Front is spying on him, and he wants that to happen because he's part of Dedra's plan to incite rebellion with a rebel group so that the Empire can hammer down on that even harder, which is her ultimate plan. So what did we think of Cyril? Because he's one of my favorite parts of this arc, where we see him kind of grow as, like, he keeps growing more competent for the wrong side, obviously, but he keeps growing.
Yeah, I mean, I really liked Cyril in this episode. It's kind of interesting how, talk about laughing. His whole conversation with his mom was cracking me the hell up. Yeah. And the fact that the Gorman Front's, like, listening to all of that was interesting. I also found it interesting how, he's still, like, thinks he's doing, like, the right thing, and he really wants that, like, approval of that he's doing the right thing. Like you guys saw later in the episode when he met with what's the main ISP agent's like director's name? What's that guy's name?
Oh, I don't exactly remember his name, but
yeah, but like when he met with him, you could just see like how much like approval like Cyril like wants to get, you know, from the Empire. And that like seems like a theme that he is still trying, you know, to go down. I also kind of like the double agent thing that he's kind of going on in this arc. What did you guys think of Cyril?
Yeah, I think it's funny that Dedra's letting him play spy. I think it's something that he's always wanted to do. I do get a little like weirded out by their relationship because I do think it's a little toxic and there's definitely a little power struggle in there. Top bottom.
Yeah, she's absolutely.
My
bottom king. All right.
But I still think that this is going to go so south for Cyril because I'm telling you right now, like I there's going to be a destruction of Gorman in some form, whether it's going to be the entire planet or something else. I think Cyril's going to wake up and Dedra is still allowing this man for an entire year now to get better. Like he is very good. He's always been good. You know, he may have been a little over charismatic or overzealous, you know, over ambitious, but yeah, when he meets Partagas and Dedra in that room, it's very interesting to even see that Partagas was like, great job. And then he was like, this is the best day ever. Yeah. And so, you know, like, it's just really interesting how Dedra's like, oh man, all right.
Okay, bro. Yeah. Go back.
Yeah, you know?
I'll let you out of your cage again. Go.
Yeah, man. It's and remember, she got demoted too. So maybe she's going to turn cloak on him too. And because there's definitely a piece of the puzzle that they haven't been telling him of what exactly is going to be going on. So I fear for my boy Cyril. We'll see what happens, man.
I agree. Something is going to happen. And I don't know what. And it's probably not going to be good.
I think he's going to turn. I think he will turn towards the rebellion. Even like looking at his conversations with his mother, where he was like low key defending like the Gormans.
He is playing into it,
but I think like he has enough empathy towards people. I think that he will be able to like make that switch. If something really bad does happen, I think he has the capacity to see Gormans as people and anybody outside the Empire as people, because he's worked with those people. Like he is, even though it's in cahoots, like he could form like an attachment to them or a sympathy with them at least.
Yeah, that
could be a trigger.
Look what happened with how he started this journey, right? It was because somebody in his company got murdered. He's a good guy. Obviously he's on the wrong side and he's totally like putting down and misguided and everything that's going on. But I'm telling you right now, bro, if this guy sees anything that he sees is wrong, oh my gosh, you don't want that. Cyril's going to be so dangerous to the Empire and the ISB if that happens. I mean, he may end up teaming with Cassian, the guy he was supposed to be hunting the entire time. You know, that would be insane. Might happen. Not saying it is, but yeah, really, we can see what happens here.
Yeah. Exactly. And let's kind of move forward a little bit. Let's actually touch on Saw Gerrera. There's so many things happening in this episode. It's going to be hard to kind of get everything, but Saw Gerrera is something that it was so interesting to see him. I think Forrest Whitaker does a fantastic job. We didn't see him that much in Rogue One. Like he was only there for a little bit and he kind of portrayed like the crazy old man who's like talking to himself and like,
not lies.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. You can see his mind is obviously fractured, but like, this is probably like prime Saw Gerrera where we're seeing him like basically do crazy stuff and act crazy, but still be like super effective in everything that he's doing. What were your first impressions of Saw Gerrera making his like appearance in this show?
I mean, I just love Saw's character, but also one thing I will say is dude is huffing that Rhydonium. I wonder why he's crazy. He's really, you know, going off the drugs, but I really thought it was interesting to see just kind of how like radical and different Saw Cell is. What is that kid's name? The kid from Ferrix. Do we know what his name is? You know how he joined like Saw's group, and you can just see immediately just like how kind of just untrustworthy, like Saw was, and basically from the start is like, oh, I'm just gonna get this kid's information and I'm gonna kill him. Like, he kind of just doesn't care. What is that kid's name, by the way? You guys know?
No, I don't know. I don't know his name. I know that he was like 11 years old though when he saw Rogue One. He's, I think, very, it's Wilman. Young.
Wilman, is that his name? Wilman Pack?
Yes, Wilman. Yes, that's Wilman, what he says.
Yeah, the
Wilman.
You have all the combinations for the, I guess, the Rhydonium transfer. And yeah, it kind of shows like how Saw is kind of, you know, like, I guess, air quotes, crazy. I mean, we find out later that the one guy who was teaching, you know, was definitely like a, you know, an Imperial spy, or allegedly an Imperial spy.
Let's touch on that.
Yeah,
don't,
let's touch on that.
I'm not 100. I'm not. I'm like 50-50 on if he actually was like being like, if he actually was a spy. I think that's something that Saul would just do if he thinks that Wilman is better equipped for whatever we're doing. Yeah. Like, I think he has no problem. Like, it's basically a wake up call to Wilman being like, hey, like, this, you're in it now. Like, I don't know. I could totally see Saul just doing something that insane where he just like basically plants something. Cause basically all that happened was he shot the guy, and then what's his face took out something from his pocket. He's like, look at this. And like, we don't really know what anything is. So in my head, my first thought was not like, oh, he's like definitely a spy. I kind of thought there could be some gray.
Yeah. I kind of thought too, it might've been like Saw, cause Saw, you know, is kind of seemed like a little crazy. Like maybe it was kind of like elucidating that, or like, not really, like, wasn't like 100% true. Like, Daggerfear, like, what did you think of that whole thing?
I do think he was a spy. And mm-hmm. and I think that's the whole point of like this era is to us. And by the way, I have never felt so sadly for Saul Guerrera ever in all of this. And when he is sniffing the Rhydonium and he says, it's my sister, which was like a crazy callback, by the way,
Clone Wars.
Because we all know from Clone Wars that that is literally what started him down this radicalness of everything mm-hmm. that was going on. But, you know, if you know Saul, like, dude, there is a method to the madness, and he knows. He's not a fool. That's why he's able to survive for so long. That's why he's so dangerous, not just to the Empire, but to the Rebellion as well.
Yeah.
I do think that guy, what is his name, Pullet or something? I do think that he was a spy, because he's starting to talk to Saul Guerrera and talking about, hey, sorry, that's my cat. He's hungry. he's talking about, hey, dude, there's so many different combinations. I don't know what it is. Can you just tell me what we're doing and where we're going so I know and I can focus on that? And then I think in that instance where he wanted that information, Saul Guerrera gets close to him and tells him a fake coordinate where we were going. And I think that was like kind of leading you on that he was a spy and he was doing so, because they're all radicals. They are crazy. I mean, they don't even really have food, you know, what's going on. But yeah, that, it's a very slow show for me still, but that was so powerful. That monologues, everything. That Wilman's character, I didn't give a damn about in the first season, but you see how he's progressing slowly. And now he's a really big piece of this insurrectionist, these radicals, you know, with Saul Guerrera. Like, he's the main man, bro. Like, I don't know, like that was so powerful for Star Wars as like people like, hey man, you know, this is who we are. We need to be this way to do the shit that we're going to do to the Empire, because no one else can do it but us, you know? And I was just like, damn, bars, you know?
Yes.
That was crazy, dude. That was such a good arc. That was insane. Yeah.
And I think it speaks to the fact like the Rebellion needs Saul Guerrera, and it kind of goes back to the earlier point of like, hey, Luthen is a certain level of like ruthlessness and things like that, but it's almost, in my head, I think Luthen thinks it's almost like he's playing chess, where it's like, these pieces, these people aren't like real to him almost. They're like, they're different. Yeah. Like, he's like at a super meta level of the Rebellion, where Saul Guerrera is on the field. They're like in the field blowing people up.
He's
like
in the trenches.
I even argue that Luthen is losing it and that he's coming undone, because the way he is, everything's so tactical and meticulous and stuff like that. Bro, we are 3 years now, too, in the next week, 2 years away from the Battle of Yavin. Like, we do not have time. He even tells his buddy there, like, hey, man, you used to tell me to wait. You tell me patient. What's going on? He's like, we don't have any more time. You know, like, okay, well, we're losing. You know, we don't even have a rebellion yet, you know, so officially anyway. Right. But yeah, that was, I thought that was like a really important scene. I feel like, man, I'm so sad we do not have a lot more of live action Saw Gerrera, man. Wow.
Yeah. And I think going off your point where it seems like Luthen is kind of losing it, he loses it when he realizes that he's going to have to go to this party and steal this, this audio device, because
oh,
if not, the entire
God.
Thing,
I
the
love
entire
that.
Rebellion is dead, is gone. Like it's it will literally not exist anymore if he doesn't get that piece off. So he panics, and you see him yell, and we can talk about that scene for a little bit. Where
yes,
talk about it. Yeah.
Everyone's at the party. Mon Mothma's there. The whole crew, all Luthen's whole crew is there. Like Bail Organa is there. I made a video about this earlier, but yeah. I think like.
Because they recasted him.
Yeah, they recasted him. I think it's pretty good. Like, yeah. I think they basically, I read that Tony Gilroy said the schedules didn't match up.
Yeah, it's the Agent Smith thing all over again for the new Matrix. I'm not a fan. I don't like it, but I understand.
Right.
I get it, you know.
Yeah. I guess it was better than like a CGI face that was like creepy. So,
and I think I mean, they dropped him in there just so now we know. Like I feel like that scene wouldn't have been there unless I think he's gonna have a way bigger role in the next two arcs, or we'll see him at least more. But
sure.
Yeah, let's talk about that that scene where they have to take the device off of the art piece. What that was the most intense part of the show for me.
Dude, I was like freaking out for them. I was like, oh my God, are they gonna get now? Like, and the thing is too, like. You know, like Luthen's assistants. What is her name? I'm so bad at names in the show, but you know, she's having the ISB like undercover agent kind of like block review, and they're going through the gallery really slowly, and it's like building the suspense. Like, oh my God, are they about to get caught? And then it gets like stuck in there, or like you see like her hands bleeding. That was like
Clea.
Wait, what?
Clea, Clea.
Clea. Yeah, Clea.
Clea. Oh, Clea. Oh, I thought you said Leia, and I was like, oh my God, Leia.
I think that's supposed. His advisor. Although she seemed like she was kind of running stuff when they were fighting, which was interesting.
Running stuff,
yeah.
She told the ISB guy, like, "Listen here, you little shit, you're gonna block this." Thing for me.
Yeah, but even Luthen, you know, she was like talking this stuff to Luthen too. He's like, "Well, what did you want, bro? Do you want to do this? Or, like, do you want to win the war? Or do you want to win the war, buddy? You know?"
Right.
Like, I was crazy.
Business.
Yeah, she was. I will say though, I was laughing through a lot of that scene, especially when they were freaking out. I want to share my screen. Is that something I could do? It's just a picture.
Yeah.
But I don't know if you guys I can't share a screen, but I don't know if you guys have ever seen Pawn Wars, and there's this, it's basically about like people, there's this pawn shop, and they have all these like artifacts and stuff coming in, but they're not experts. They have to call the experts to see if this stuff that's really valuable is like actually legitimate, so they need to call someone in. And I felt like there's this one guy they always call on the show, and it's literally the guy that just makes sure that everything is real and authentic.
Yeah.
And I felt like that's exactly what happened to Luthen.
Try sharing now.
So much, and then it's just like, oh no, they called the expert, and they said that this thing is fake. And so that's, I just thought it was so. Dude, yes, I thought it was.
Let me call my guy.
Yeah,
yeah, everything
let me call
about
my
space.
Guy. That's him.
Let me call my guy about space artifacts.
Try sharing your screen now.
Luthen's arch nemesis, bro. Like, could you imagine that? This guy comes in. No, that's not Rakatan, actually. This is a fake, you know?
Yeah.
That's hilarious, man. That was so funny. But great scene.
Also, Mon Mothma being there with Director Krennic
was
divas.
So
they're
funny.
They are divas, bro. Both of them. It was just, I swear to God, I was watching a Twitter conversation in real life in Andor right there, man. It was crazy. Back talk, back quote tweet, like just right there in front of everyone's face. It was crazy. Yeah.
It feels like in high school history class when you get one person who's on the very one side of the other person who raises their hand, and they're like, all right. And then we're just like, all right, here we go. Like, it's going down. We're going to have a conversation here. Like, everybody get their popcorn ready. But I really, Mon Mothma was just throwing jab after jab after jab after
jab. Great distraction while they were removing the audience.
I mean, she really had no idea either.
She didn't even know.
Yeah. But, also, I had a question for you guys. Are they referencing, what I mean by they, the Imperials like Krennic, are they referencing the Republic as the Empire now? because there's some weird things where they say, like Dedra was talking about how, like, oh, I grew up in this, like, you know, in an imperial orphanage, you know, and I was just like, oh, interesting. But she's like 30, late 30s ish, and everything else. And Krennic was talking about how he learned in an imperial, the Imperial Naval Academy. I was like, wait a minute, hang on, bro. Like, you're also like really right. old talking about, you know. So and that's what I'm thinking is happening, is that they're yeah. like self-referencing, like the Republic was actually the Empire. That's what we're yeah. just calling it, the Empire now. Yeah. So yeah, it seems like that, because Andor doesn't usually make those mistakes. So I was right. wondering if you guys also felt that way.
Also Saul mentions the Republic too, in his speech. He's like, he basically says something in the realm of, we will all be dead before the Republic returns, yet we still fight. So obviously he's referencing the Republic as
yes.
Republic, Empire, then the Republic will return,
yes. where,
as opposed to, I'm sure anybody who is an Imperial will be like, it's the same thing. Obviously,
Palpatine, yes, we always were.
We just expanded, yeah. like we're just better yeah. now. Yes. So that makes complete sense.
Mm. Yeah, I think if you say that, if like they're just, it's just the Empire, I wouldn't say you're wrong. It's the same people, same staff, same, you know. Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. No, yes. So one of the other parts that we haven't hit on is the heist that the Gormans do on the Empire. Like, we, heartbreaking, man. Heartbreaking. What, like, obviously Cassian leaves, and then we see Luthen sends in his reinforcements basically to get the job done for what he hoped, I guess, Cassian would do. But what do we think about this whole arc? Because this shit goes wrong, and everybody knew it was going to go wrong. I like, this is Andor, like something always goes wrong, but like, I wasn't expecting that.
Yeah. It was kind of hinted something was going to go wrong. It was kind of like what Andor like kind of hinted at. It's like, oh, they're not ready. And you kind of see in their meetings, like they're not really fighters. This is like their first time kind of doing this. So it was kind of like implied that like something was going to go wrong, but I didn't think that was going to go wrong. What did you guys think? You know, I guess we have to talk about Cinta. Like, that was just kind of out of right field. I wasn't expecting that at all. That was really,
I think the advantage for us in believing these things are going to happen is this is the last season. So stuff is just going to escalate immediately. As soon as they brought Cinta in, I knew she was going to die. And then as soon as I saw the kiss, and I was like, it's a wrap. It's over. It's done. You know,
you're more able to predict than I am. I didn't
know. Well, because like, I feel like Star Wars, especially animated Star Wars, like whenever a character is getting more attention and then they also get a love story, you know, it's, they're going to die. You know? They're going to die. So I just like, oh, okay. And then that young kid that ended up doing that, by the way, was also extremely ambitious and experienced. And so I felt like he was going to be the green one that ended up doing this. Also, I feel like that guy that was fighting him also needs to take responsibility. That guy was a punk the entire arc. Like, what the flip? Very confrontational. I don't know what his deal was, but but they tried. They tried really hard, but you could see, even with all the resources and how high and mighty they are, they really need someone like Valen Cinta there. It's actually kind of crazy that there was only two people there organizing, which also says a lot about like how damn capable Cinta and Val are. Like, just them themselves are organizing this, you know? So really says a lot how important these pieces of Luthen's people are important to the rebellion. Because I feel like it all would just blow up in their face if they did not have these people around.
Yeah, I think one of the things about that whole entire arc that really stood out to me, for Cassian, the fact that when he has that conversation with Luthen, and Luthen basically takes some digs at him, he's like, I thought you would be the one to help them. Like, what happened? Like, why aren't you in on this? Like, for like, oh, now things are too dangerous to do. Like, we are all in.
Firing
like,
shots at him. Like,
I think Luthen sees Cassian as his like prodigy, where he'll take over for what I do. I would need to train him to be able to make the tough decisions and see the big picture. He says, think like a leader is one of the lines that Luthen, remember correctly, says to Cassian. And the fact that he is, I guess, seeing like so short-sighted, he's not willing to make those sacrifices yet. He's not willing to make the sacrifices, because that conversation goes like, what happens if, you know, they get crushed? And Luthen says, it will burn right. So yes. That is a line that stuck out to me where,
crazy.
Where Luthen is up here, like we said, super meta, like, hey, if this blows up, like, it'll be fine. It'll give us attention. Like, even he's not thinking about like these people that Cassian just met are going to die, but he's thinking that this will be some really good attention for the rebellion. Yeah. So that's another aspect that to me was super interesting. And obviously on the ground, it's tough. It's tough to see.
But I love that interesting relationship between Luthen, because I think Luthen is right, especially if you have to fight against this Galactic Empire. You've got to do this. You know, you probably ain't going to heaven, you know, whatever it is, bro. I mean, like, this is how it is, man. You gotta get your hands dirty. And it's very similar, in my opinion. It's going to be kind of whack, but it's going to be an old cut over here. But I think it's very similar to, like, the Baneanite in the Rule 2. Yeah.
All right. Technical difficulties. Go ahead.
All right, yeah. So like I was saying, is I just really enjoy this relationship between Cassian and Luthen, because I'm a big Legends guy. I love Old Republic. I love all these books. And one of the things I keep remembering is the Rule of Two, the Baneanites and Darth Bane and Zanna, you know, or Plagueis and Palpatine, Sidious. It's just so interesting how in this way, obviously they're not evil people, but they need to do these things. It's a certain way that it's been taught. And then, yes, maybe Cassian is this person, this protege that Luthien has been looking for to become the master and take control of this. Because not only is Luthien old, but, you know, this arc, I feel like, has been showing, like, bro, the guy is losing it. He can't even remember how many bugs he has and all these people, you know, and the rebellion is only going to get larger. So someone like Cassian, who we see in Rogue One, who's working with Mothma, is probably going to be that person that he wants to help control and oversee everything. So I just thought that was cool. It's like these like two Rule of Two Sith, but they're not Sith, obviously. It's the Rebellion Sith. So yeah, I really appreciate that and how that's been working out in the series.
Yeah, absolutely. And Johnny, you had something to say off camera about the that conversation as well.
Yeah, I mean, I was laughing when he like mocked Andor and was like, when Andor said last season, kill me or take me in, he goes, kill me or take me in, you're in. Like, I thought that was like so funny. And like an emphasis to Andor, like, dude, you're in this fight. Like, there's no more messing around. Like, you're either in or you're out. Like, I'll just shoot you right now, I guess. Like, I guess AC feels like Andor is kind of like not seeing the full picture, which like you guys were just talking about earlier.
And he's like a leader.
Yeah.
Yes.
Gotta think like a leader. Dude, you're in the fight. Yeah. Let's do this.
Yeah.
He's the one. There's no one else. I mean, he's the one. He steps up or step aside, bro. You know, like that's literally it, I feel like.
Yeah, I agree. And then I guess to go off of that, the next thing I want to talk about is Cyril is basically the only person that is happy with any of this outcome that happened with his face. Like, he walks away there smiling, like in his head, like everything worked to perfection, like a bonus that someone got killed, like what the Empire is doing is working to perfection. And something that was frustrating as a viewer is Cassian is actually completely right when he talks about how the Empire just loves to feed false information. And we know that's what he's doing, but something had to be done. They had to take some sort of step. So I'm interested to see where this goes. Cause like we talked about earlier, I think Cyril has the capacity to flip. I think he can turn to the rebellion, or at least against the Empire. But I don't know, like where did this leave you guys after the aftermath of this heist? Like, obviously things didn't go right.
Yeah. I mean, one thing after the heist is I absolutely loved that kid that killed Cinta got chewed out.
Yeah.
By, oh my God, what is her name? I'm so bad with names. Val.
Yeah.
Val. What'd you guys think of that scene? Like, that was so like intense, and that kid is like bawling his eyes out, and like, dude, like this, like, she was really digging into him, calling him a kid, and I mean, he literally killed her lover in front of her. Like, that's crazy stuff. Like, what'd you guys think?
Well, yeah, he is a kid. He is a kid, and and I think that's the naivety of all these people is like, oh yeah, I'm gonna stand up and fight. I'm gonna stand up and protest. You know, hashtag stand with Gorman, whatever it is. You know, I don't think these people actually know what's going on. And it's very similar to Tay in the first three episodes. It's like, it's this situational conviction where, and then when things get really real, it's like, oh shit, you know, oh, maybe I wasn't cut out for this. Yeah, duh. And I think that's the whole thing I'm taking away, which Val, I thought, did just such a great job of handling that situation, because she had every right to just go ham on this kid. But it really makes you understand the rebellion has a very long way to go. Like, a very long way to go before they even, like, be an actual threat to the Empire. It's just right. Like, wow, congratulations. You were trying to steal one truck.
Yeah.
A truck.
Yeah.
That wasn't even on an Imperial-bounded planet. You know, this isn't Coruscant or anything like that, bro. One truck. And you guys effed up and killed one of the most valuable people, if not the most valuable people on that planet. So, congratulations.
Yeah.
You haven't passed the tutorial yet.
Yeah, they failed. Yeah.
And Val says a line that really hit me was, she was everything you daydreamed about.
Yes!
That line was absolute bars. It was bars. And, like, in the moment, like, you could tell that really hits basically everybody around there, because they are not, like, pretending to be rebels at this point.
They don't
know
what it takes.
Cassian told them!
He was like, you guys aren't built for this. And, like, they saw after the first mission, like, this is what it takes. Like, you guys aren't built for this yet.
Yeah. And she makes a point to tell the kid that, like this will stay with you forever. Yeah. Like, this is a mark that will, that you have to, like, live with. Her blood is on your hands. Like, she goes in on him. And I really hope that kid eventually becomes, like, super, like, valuable to the rebellion, just as almost to, like, repay the debt that he caused. But that scene really, really stuck with me, and specifically that line was really tough to see.
Fire.
And then, so let's get to the end of this episode. Bix's get back, Bix's revenge. It came out of nowhere, to be honest.
I love,
like,
that.
In my head, like, I wasn't really knowing.
The crumbs were there, like, though.
So. The crumbs were there. Like,
we
see, and we know that Cassie and Bix do this together, as we saw. They walk out together. But earlier, I forget exactly what the line was, but Luthen was saying, like, you're more valuable, like, by yourself. But this might be, I don't know if this was a Luthen sanctioned mission. I'm assuming it was. But, like, the fact that he let them both go together was I think a character moment for him. But let's talk about what the hell happened. Like, we see Dr. Gorst walking in a hallway, and I just kind of thought it was, like, leading up to something. And he walks into an office, like, very nonchalant, like, and then all of a sudden we hear the sound of a blaster, and he turns around, and his first reaction isn't, and you said this earlier, Dagobert, like, the first reaction isn't like, oh my God, there's a blaster pointed at my head. I'm about to die.
He's like, I know you. I know, where
do I know you from? Like, how do I know you? Like,
did I see you at the bar
the other day? Or, like, what's going on? Like, I don't know. What did you guys think?
Yeah, dude, it was just like an odd reaction. I think it just showed, like, how no emotion he has. I can't tell you, I had so much satisfaction her strapping him in that chair and putting on that torture device. And then I assume they blew up the office that he was in. Like, I'm assuming that's what that explosion was, right?
Yeah.
So that guy's super dead and super
super dead.
Super deserved. I loved every part of that. And I think that was a good moment for Cassian and Bix to kind of, like, you know, get rid of the trauma that they had and kind of, like, move on. And, like, you know, now, like, I'm sure we'll see in the next three episodes, like, them be more of a leadership role and, you know, not have as much of these struggles as we saw them have in this three episode arc.
Yeah, that was amazing to see that power couple do that thing, bro. Yeah. Like, I straight up, man, like, I honestly, I felt like also Bix was being really nice, bro, because as soon as that guy would have said, I think I know you. I'm not sure. Boma, I would have emptied the whole clip, bro.
Yep.
Like it would have been the whole clip, and then he's getting all that torture stuff, and then we're blowing him up, man, because this boy's gonna remember today, you know. Yeah. So I straight up, but I do feel like this is a win now. I'm telling you, bro, Biggs is gonna die. I know for a fact that Biggs is definitely going to die, because if this is such a high for her at this moment, as well as Cassian. But I feel like that is the stretch where, all right, we won this. Now I'm free. And I feel like a lot of the time that's going to be really deceptive to push Vix into a scenario where it's probably going to be a little overzealous and do something that maybe she'll self-sacrifice or just end up, you know, paying for it. But, man, it's just cool to see them right now, because, damn, bro, that walk and that Cassian cloak on her, bro, she's walking out. And that Imperial was like, hey, you're not supposed to be.
Dang.
Boom. Yeah. Done, buddy. Nah, it's a wrap. That was sick, bro. That was so cool.
She needed that. She needs that.
Yeah, she needed that.
Yeah, dude. That power walk was straight. She knew, bro. Like, she just, she dropped the whole lobby, man. Ain't nobody in that game was busting her, man. Yeah,
she's done with the drugs. Now he's dead.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think we all know what's gonna happen, but like, I'm just asking, like, can we get a character death that's on screen if we're gonna get one? Like, please. We talked about it last time. It was like I think there's a point to that where everything's so sudden, and it's ruthless. But like, I need something. I need last words or something.
Brazo was good and sad. Yeah, but tragic, but it's just like, are we going to see a Churrit Inua, you know, from, you know, I'm one with the Force and everything, like, what's going to happen here? Because Rogue One was kind of crazy in that last hour. So, I can't wait to see the rest of this. And I'm also dreading everybody that's not in the movie, because I think they're all going to die. So,
I think so too.
Yeah, man. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I think that's the whole episode. I still got like my critiques. I would love to hear your guys' critiques if you have any. I doubt it though.
We can talk critiques.
Yeah, we can talk critiques. I'm definitely a fanboy of the show, but I guess the only critique that I could have is, I will admit the first episode was definitely a little bit of a slow burn, but that's just something the show is just, you know, it really is building things up. And then by 5 and 6, like, I was like, you know, all right, here we go. But I will admit episode 4 was a little slow. And that's like the most criticism I've seen from people about the show, is just like, oh, it's a lot of dialogue. It's a lot of, you know, talking, not a lot of action. Is like, what kind of criticisms are you guys like thinking about the show? Is that what, like, you were thinking, Dagavir, or like, what were you thinking?
Yeah, man, it's just, I made this video today on my TikTok account where I actually put my face and talk about stuff. So
I saw you got a little bit of love on that too, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I'm doing it differently, you know? I'm not trying to put my face in front of everyone every single day. Well, maybe I'll just do 1 week and that's how much they can tolerate. But I think Andor is going to be one of those things that not a lot of people are going to appreciate. And I just feel like the show has incredible writing. It has the most beautiful sets I've ever seen in a Star Wars TV show. The acting is phenomenal. It is the best. Like, every single scene has a monologue where I'm just like, bar, 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 like straight up. And it's sad to say that majority of the casual fan, I don't even want to call them casual fan base, because I think there's also people that like are very diehard fans and they just can't get into Andor. And to those people, Andor is Star Wars is lightsabers. Star Wars is the Force. It's lasers. It's space battles. Because that's what the franchise means to them. And that's what resonates with them the most. And it's a tragedy that Andor is slow. And yes, it is extremely dialogue heavy. And these people just can't digest it, man. And I swear to God, if this thing had a single lightsaber, or was just a little faster, or had some form of the Force, whether it's an Inquisitor hunting, casting it down, I swear to God, everyone and their mother would be watching the show. People that don't even care about Star Wars, just has Baby Yoda, has brought in fans that people like that don't watch it, they just know Baby Yoda, and Andor could have been that show. But I do think that it is at times just too much for that casual movie only watching fan base, and it's sad. Yeah, that's what I just feel. Not, it's not a hate. It's not hate. That's just how I feel.
That's a good observation, because season one was like one of the lowest watched. I think I mentioned it last time. It's one of the lowest watched Star Wars shows, but it's so good. But like, that's the point. It's not like the casual or like just like Star Wars fan, you know, there's not lightsabers. There's not any of that. It's like what the franchise is built on. So it's just a different kind of show that like some of these Star Wars fans just aren't going to be able to get into. But I mean, you guys know how much I love this show. So I'm watching it. Connor, what about you? Like, what do you think?
I think my criticism is still the same, because I am one. I like absolutely love dialogue heavy shows. So this is like right up my alley. I love like I love the lightsaber stuff. I love the Force. I love all of that. But I also love like stuff adjacent, like just like outside of that, where we see like get glimpses of like regular people in Star Wars. I think that's something that I really enjoy, but I think my criticisms are still the same, where it's like this gap. Like I feel like I'm like watching a new show every week almost. Where it's like you have to kind of like figure out what's going on. Like,
And
it wasn't like, I don't think it was too bad this week, because we still we've had these kind of through plot points with like Gorman and stuff like that. But you just kind of have to figure out where the characters are at. Like, we have no idea why. What's his face? The kid with Saw Gerrera. Like, why? Like, how did he get there? You know what I mean? Like, how did you just kind of have to like just kind of either fill that in on your own, or just be like, okay, well, now he's here. Now this character's here and he's in this situation. So it's,
probably,
it's like we're watching the beginning of a new season of our show every week, just because it's that gap. So that's my biggest criticism. I think, like, just to echo what everybody else said, like the acting is super incredible. So, like the conversation between Cassian when he gets there as Variant Sky and like the original Gorman, like that was like a super good acting. Like, that was oh my God. I don't know. I could just talk about the dialogue and the acting forever in this show, but that was something that how he goes back from like in character to out of character. Like, that really stood out to me as a really good acting performance. But I think the gaps are too much, but like, that's the only part that I see that's a negative on that end.
Yeah. I said the biggest negative for me, because what I was saying, I feel like it's just more true to the series as a whole, more than like a criticism. For me, it's just like, I do think at times it is too realistic, like the language, which if you watch the case thing where they show the behind the scenes where it's tell you everything. They were talking about how it's like a mixture of like German and French or something. Like, they create a whole language. But yeah, I did feel like at times, the Gorman language, where I felt like at times, like, this is too, like, this sounds like German. This sounds like French. Yeah. You know, this is too much. Some of the settings where like Cassian is literally like prepping his food and he's cutting and I felt like, I was like, all right, that's a little too humanly. I'm not saying like, you know, I just feel like maybe it would be a different, but I think that's the risk you run when you go so in depth in Star Wars that it leaves no imagination for people to feel like it's Star Wars again. And I just think that people can't cope with that. You know, people don't have a lot of imagination and they don't want to see that dragged out for them in that picture. You know, they don't want to see the air fryer that they have, or the lamp on the table, or the cutting board, or things like that. It might just take them out and they'll start to disassociate with that, you know? So that's the biggest thing for me. But still, like, I love this stuff because I do feel like I'm living in a Star Wars book where I'm seeing these characters and talking and engaging with them every day. And it's just like, I dig this. You know, I will put this ambience on of their little safe house on Coruscant. Bix might be complaining about it, but I love it because it's on Coruscant and it's raining, you know? But yeah, but I think that's, again, I think it's a toleration level of how much of Star Wars do you love, and is this Star Wars to you? Because if it's not, then that's honestly the defining factor. You know, I don't think they really hate it. It's just hard for them to grasp that this version of what it looks like and feels like. And that's hard for them to digest.
That's a really good point to bring it up with the books, because I've read so many Star Wars books that, like, that's it. It gives you that feeling where it's a lot more grounded. And a lot of the books are really grounded. Like when they went into that like supermarket, like I eat that stuff up. Like I could see myself going into the supermarket and everything's an Aurabesh, and that is something that's like super interesting to me. But that could be something like, why the hell are these characters going to a grocery store? This is Star Wars. Like, But that those little moments to me are what I eat up. So like that, like me as a Star Wars fan, as opposed to somebody else, like both are completely valid.
I live in Orlando, so I'm like 20 minutes away from Galaxy's Edge, the theme park, you know, and they have the Coke and everything there. It's obviously it's a little silly, but I love it. I love it. Like, I really enjoy that part of the Star Wars expanded universe. One of the coolest new freaking canon books is the Batuu book that they have with by Moradi, and it talks about Leia and everything. Dude, that is such a good book that no one probably has ever read, but it's there's so much of that with like
Captain Cardinal. You know,
Captain Cardinal, exactly. And everything else that's going on with Phasma later. But that specific story about the culture, and we see a lot of the culture of Gorman in there. And so it made me feel like, this is a part of Star Wars that I'm used to because I've read so many books.
Yeah, but also, I guess I didn't even think about that.
But see, that's the thing, though, is like people aren't thinking about that, bro. They're thinking about a Sith Lord, a Darksider, or a Jedi. You know, and that's the thing. It's like, bro, like they're eating that, they feast on that, and they will have that every day. Like, I'll have peanut butter and jelly every day, and I don't get bored of it, you know?
Right.
But that's just me, bro. Ain't nobody else going to be eating that every single day, you know? So, and that's what I feel like Andor is and isn't for some people. So, I get it, man. I get the criticisms. I understand. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, it's just such a different, you know, kind of Star Wars.
Completely different medium.
Yeah. Like, it's almost like world building, if that makes sense, if you know what I mean. Like, we're seeing this entirely different angle of Star Wars that we haven't seen before in a show. So it's just different. Yeah. I think some people, you know, aren't used to, you know, aren't really like expecting that in Star Wars. But
no,
I'm loving it.
When have they got world building into this level? When have they got dialogue?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Level? Like, it's really we're really like in the thick of like the Star Wars universe. We've never seen that before the show. But like you guys said, like I've read some of the books, like I remember reading the Ahsoka book and I'm seeing her like on a farm and like all that stuff. Never seen that in Star Wars before. And I found that really interesting. But again, like to other people, you know, it's just something they'd never seen that side of Star Wars before. So it's just different and kind of weird to them, kind of foreign. Mm-hmm. I'm excited for the next three episodes. What do you guys think is going to happen in the next three? It'll be another 1 year kind of time jump.
Probably Gorman Massacre is probably the biggest thing. Second massacre, because I guess Krennic had already.
Oh, yeah. Which is cool, by the way. Tarkin, I can't believe they didn't retcon that.
It's from Legends, right? From the Legends books.
Dude, I've made so many videos on this stuff, and I was like, it's going to be an Andor. And then I was like, it actually is an Andor. Oh, okay, it's canon. Like, we're talking about it. So there's, like, going to be a Gorman Massacre, and then there's going to be a Gorman Tragedy. So, I don't know. I almost think the whole planet's going to get destroyed, bro. I think something has to happen.
Dude, something crazy is happening.
I mean, they said
it. He's going to drive Mon Mothma away. It's supposed to be like the turning point, kind of, for like a lot of the rebellion. So I think we get that next episode. It's going to be sad, like for those people. Because I will say I like some of the culture of Gorman. It's literally space France is what I like concluded. Like 1940s, like space France. Like
That's what they were saying in the behind the scenes, I think, too.
Yeah. Like, they got inspiration for that planet from, like, 1940s, like, resistance. Like, French fighters against the Germans in World War II. Like, that's, like, their main...
Very George Lucas.
Reference, the war and, like, real events worked in the Star Wars. I mean, George did that with the Vietnam War and, you know, in the 70s. But, I think Gorman, definitely Gorman's definitely getting destroyed. I think this is when Mon like leaves, like, you know, like we would maybe see her, you know, like we see her in Rebels kind of.
Yeah.
What do you guys think's happening? You think Gorman, you guys think?
I think it's the whole thing's going to be about Gorman, honestly.
Yeah. Any other predictions for the next episode other than Gorman getting destroyed?
I think it'll be faster. Yeah. I think the pacing will be faster.
Yeah.
Because that's all I keep hearing is like, this is the last half of Andor is the best writing in Star Wars ever. And I hope it's true. Like, I hope that that is true, because if it's even, you know, 0.5 faster than it needs to be, I swear to God, more people are going to watch the show just because they're going to want to see what happens. And I guarantee you, because that little change will happen and it'll be quicker paced, everybody else will start watching it again. Because that's what I'm excited for. I'm going to enjoy it either way. I'm a Star Wars fan. Whatever, bro. I was enjoying Hayden Christensen and everyone. Everyone was telling me that he wasn't a great actor. So whatever. But, you know, I feel like it's just so close to being like the literal best Star Wars ever. If we could just get over this hump. And I'm hoping that the second half of the series speeds it up, man.
Yeah.
I'm hoping. Because, yeah.
Yeah.
They're missing out.
Yeah. Here's the hoping. Yeah. But, yeah, I think we're going to wrap this up here. I appreciate everybody for listening. If you're here this far, if you're here this long, appreciate you guys listening. Where can we find you guys on socials?
You can find me on TikTok at Daddy Sheev. Follow me. I don't post anymore, but maybe I will soon.
Start posting, brother.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's go do it. I am on just about every single social platform. I'm Lord Dagovir. I do YouTube with lore videos, and I also talk about Star Wars everywhere else. So if you tolerate that, hit up your boy.
Let's go. And you'll find me at Jedi Connor on TikTok and YouTube. Hopefully we'll be streaming some Fortnite here soon.
Yes.
I would love that. So stay tuned. Appreciate everybody, and may the Force be with you.